If you don't do it now, you probably won't have another chance to get out, so I beg you to take this step for you. It is the right thing to do. Leah. The following is part of the missing person report I filed with the LAPD. Missing person, MP. Michelle Shelley Miscavige. Person reporting, PR. Leah Remini. Background. MP is married to Church of Scientology leader David Miscavige. PR is a well-known celebrity and, until recently, a 30-year member of the church. MP is a subject of ongoing news reports due to her sudden and unexplained disappearance several years ago. On 8/5/13, the PR reported that she has been a longtime personal friend of the MP, who has not been seen nor heard from in public to her knowledge since August of 2007, when the MP attended a funeral in Las Vegas. The PR last saw and had personal contact with the MP in August of 2006 while attending a large yearly event at the Church of Scientology Celebrity Center located at 5930 Franklin Avenue in Hollywood, which is also the last known residence for the MP. The PR stated that she and the MP have exchanged cards, phone calls, and gifts numerous times each year since 2004, especially on special occasions, and it is totally out of character for the MP not to contact or communicate with her. PR stated that while helping the MP get ready for the event in 2006, the MP seemed happy, talkative, and behaved normally until her husband would appear, causing the MP to become nervous, fearful, withdrawn, and timid. PR recalled attending an event in 2005 with the MP during which the MP seemed fine until her husband would come near and then the MP would become fearful and quiet. It was obvious to the PR that the MP was in fear of her husband but refused to talk about it. In November of 2006, the PR attended the wedding of celebrity Tom Cruise in Italy and noticed that the MP was not in attendance. The PR asked the MP's husband where she was and was immediately chastised for asking. The PR was shocked and alarmed by the angry reaction to her inquiry about the absence of her friend and asked another member of the church why the MP was not at the wedding, and again, she was warned not to ask any questions about the MP. Shortly after returning to the United States, the PR was sent to a church location in Florida and subjected to intense thought modification counseling by church members for having questioned why the MP was not at the wedding. The PR said that as a longtime member of the church, it is well known that members become controlled by the church and are conditioned to believe that they cannot leave the church once they have joined, nor can they communicate or talk about church dealings or workings with outsiders. If members disobey or run afoul of the church rules, teachings, or question authority, they are separated from their friends and family and made to do menial hard labor. In essence, the members are brainwashed and begin to believe that they must obey and follow the church leaders, and they become distrustful of outsiders and refrain from speaking against their treatment by the church out of fear of recrimination by church leaders. The PR believes, as do other ex-members of the church, that the MP is being secretive against her will and not allowed to communicate with anyone on orders by her husband. Given the PR's intimate knowledge of the church and their harsh response to any criticism, the PR is in fear for the MP's safety. The PR provided contact information for other ex-members who can verify these concerns. Mark and Claire Headley can be reached at... Recent rumors report the MP is being held at a church location in the community of Running Springs in San Bernardino County called CST. Kevin went directly to the head of his division, Deputy Chief Beatrice Germala, and asked if he could handle my missing person report himself. But his boss ordered him to send the report on Shelley over to LAPD's missing persons unit. Despite Kevin's protest, Chief Germala, who didn't want to make waves, wouldn't budge on her original decision. After a few days, Kevin called over to missing persons to check on the status of the report. That's when a detective told him that someone from the unit had spoken to the church's lawyer, who said Shelley was fine and didn't want to be found. Kevin asked the detective if anyone had actually spoken directly to Shelley. No, the detective answered. We spoke to the attorney. Then she cut the conversation short and said she couldn't answer any more of his questions. We're done here, she said. The LAPD didn't find Shelley, But it did release a statement on August 8, 2013, that the case was closed and my report had been, quote, unfounded, which the Church of Scientology used to discredit the reason for my report in the first place. I called Lieutenant Andre Dawson, who oversaw the investigation, as the person in charge of the Detective Support and Vice Division, which encompasses missing persons. Hi, Lieutenant. I was wondering why you guys did nothing about this case, but still took the time to say that my report was unfounded. I'm sorry, but I can't discuss it with you, he said. You can't discuss the friggin' report I filed? We looked into it, and she doesn't want to be found. Did you see her with your eyes? Did anyone see her? Did you pull her aside and give her my note when you were alone, like I asked? I mean, I told you the only way to do this was to get to her first, pull her aside, and give her my note. Did you do that? Ma'am, I'm sorry, but this case is closed, and I can't disclose any information to you. And there you have it. Case closed. Later on, a friend of Shelley's explained to me that on numerous occasions, Shelley told her that she believed that when you get to the top of Scientology, you forego your right to escape. Her friend was convinced that Shelley truly believed this. That same friend had seen several high-up people try to leave, only to be tracked down and brought back to the church. She thought that even if someone reached Shelley, she wouldn't want to leave. Typical for this situation. She likely had been indoctrinated since early childhood to believe that whatever circumstances she finds herself in are her doing. That she is responsible for being sent away to live in isolation from her family for years, and that only when she has resolved her own transgressions will all be well. All the people that I had considered my extended family, like John Futris, Susan Watson, and so many more, turned their backs on me. Even those who at first said they would stand by me eventually disconnected. Stacy Francis, the woman whom I had introduced to Scientology and taken into my home when she needed a place to stay, whose daughter I witnessed being born and was godmother to, wrote me around the time of my problems with the church. Quote, you have been the only family I have ever known, and I don't give a fuck what these motherfuckers have to tell me. But I never heard from Stacy again. A couple of years back, when I turned 40, I had a big birthday party that all my good friends from the church came to, people I had known since I was a teenager. Each person gave me a letter to commemorate the milestone. When I look back over the 35 letters I received on that birthday, I realized that I had lost every single Scientology friend who had written me a letter. As much as I tried to shield Sophia from what was happening to me, one day she saw me crying. Mommy, I know you're done with psychology. Ironically, she confused the word Scientology with psychology. In here, she said, pointing to my head. But you have to be over psychology in here. And then she touched my heart with her finger. I couldn't have loved my daughter more in that moment. How she knew what she was saying, I have no idea, but her words were wise way beyond her years. While my so-called friends had turned on me, my family amazingly showed me nothing but support. Whatever I had felt I might have lacked in a traditional family during my upbringing, my ideas profoundly changed when the chips were down and my immediate family had to make a decision between the church and me. There was no discussion. It was not something they had to consider. They simply chose me. To some people, that may sound like a no-brainer, but where this particular church is concerned, it was in no way the norm. A simple search on the internet will reveal the thousands of stories of disconnection where mothers, fathers, children, husbands, wives, and more have been torn apart because they were convinced they had to choose the church over their families, that their eternity was at stake if they failed to do so. So for me, knowing that my family was willing to lose it all, including their eternity, and everything they had dedicated themselves to for more than 30 years by choosing family instead, was enough for me to feel overwhelmingly grateful and loved. My husband, whom I sheltered from many of the truths of what I believed to be the real practices of Scientology, had to deal with most of the fallout from my decision. For months after leaving the church, every day, And every night, I unburden myself to him, revealing more than 30 years worth of complaints and heartbreak. He, like my family, put aside his own concerns to take care of me. While I doubted many decisions in my life, it was in these moments with Angelo that I realized I, in fact, had made one really good one. He is my Prince Charming. My team that keeps me going, nanny, assistant, housekeeper, makeup artist, handyman, are not Scientologists. Some would consider them just employees. But to me, they are everything. They too had to deal with the repercussions of my choice to publicly leave the church. But rather than hold this decision against me, they stood alongside me, always concerned with how I was doing and if I was okay. Everyone lost something in this fallout. My assistant Rafi, who was recommended to me by a former assistant and a Scientologist, was disconnected from half of his family because he refused to abandon me after I was declared a suppressive person by the church. This group supported me and were protective, loving, and caring not only to me, but to my whole family. Without them, I don't think we would have made it out as well as we did. So while my team and my immediate family supported me, there were, however, some other family members who did disconnect from me. I had no good answers for Sophia, who at 9 years old asked me, "Mommy, why doesn't Auntie Catherine talk to me anymore?" Shen and my sister and her husband William were constantly giving money to his sister Catherine, who was broke and without a job. One night, they even drove to Portland, where Catherine lived, to get a dog she could no longer care for and bring it back home with them. This was a woman who, when she got pregnant, didn't have food or blankets for her bed. I called her father, a Scientologist on the upper levels, to tell him the situation his daughter was in, and he didn't care. "She got herself pregnant," he said. To me, that's not how family acts, but our being there for Catherine in her time of need meant nothing now that we were all SPs. "She can't talk to us because we left the church," I told Sophia. "I don't understand that," she said. "And you're exactly right not to. You shouldn't understand it because it doesn't make sense and it's not okay." That sums up my problem with Scientology. Despite its claims to the contrary, the practice doesn't help you better the world or even yourself. It only helps you be a better Scientologist. Scientology works 100% of the time when it is properly applied to a person who sincerely desires to improve his life, the church states. A Scientologist, in all walks of life, will attest, they have enjoyed greater success in their relationships, family life, jobs, and professions. Well, it didn't work for me or anyone I knew. All those years of applying LRH didn't make me any less flawed, hurt, aggressive, or insecure. And that was only the emotional part. The economics of Scientology often seem to come at the expense of its parishioners. Once, when the church wanted me to donate $1 million, my business manager, who was a Scientologist, advised me against it because he didn't think I had the money. Trying to put a stop to the donation was not looked at kindly. He was immediately pulled into a sec check by church officials, and he quit working for me. He appeared to be punished for simply doing his job. Most Scientologists are in the church because their hearts are in the right place and they really believe they're helping the planet. That was certainly the case with Tom Cruise's longtime assistant when she decided after more than a decade of working with the star that she wanted to move on to spend more time with her husband and newborn child. Who knows whether Tom complained about her leaving or the church decided on its own to put her through the ringer. Someone decided that she had done something wrong and she had to undergo a sec check that she says cost her so much that she lost her house. Instead of viewing this process surrounding her leaving her job as cruel injustice, she felt a huge sense of accomplishment when she finished her sec check. She took pride in the fact that she left Tom in good standing with the church. I was once a big fan of Tom's, before I got to know him. I'm sure many people could say the same thing about me or any other celebrity, but this is different. Most actors are not in charge of your faith. I don't doubt that Tom is in Scientology because he believes in it. But to me, he has simply been given too much power by his church. My disaffection wasn't a result of Tom receiving preferential treatment. It was a response to what I saw as church rules being broken for him. And as a result, Families were torn apart, and people's lives were altered forever. Tom didn't just use his position within the church to hold sway with parishioners who worked for him. He also flexed his muscles with fellow Scientology celebrities. One former Sea Org member, Mark Headley, told me about an encounter with David Miscavige in which David had been thrilled that Tom was urging other Scientology celebrities to become more active in the field and use their celebrity to disseminate Scientology in the press. Tom had even called a meeting essentially preaching Scientology to his fellow Scientology celebrities, reading LRH policies to them, and even suggesting that it would not be good for their careers in Hollywood if they did not start actively promoting Scientology. Mark recalls that David specifically told him that he did not ask Tom to make this strong push. He did it on his own. He did not ask permission. He just did it. Dave told him that if he could, he would make Tom Cruise the number two guy in Scientology. He said that Tom Cruise was a more dedicated Scientologist than anyone else he knew. There was seemingly nothing the church wouldn't do to keep its most dedicated Scientologist happy. They were even said to be involved in finding him a girlfriend. The unlucky girl chosen after Tom Cruise broke up with Penelope Cruz was Nazanin Bagnati. Naz, as her friends call her, was a beautiful, dark-haired actress. She was warm, approachable, and smart. She was also a college graduate, which was unusual for a Scientologist. She had just graduated from the University of California, Irvine, in 2003 with honors in biological sciences and was about to apply to medical school. Her mom had joined Scientology when Naz was 17, and Naz had quickly moved up the bridge herself. We first met in 2003. We were both working on our OT levels when we became friends. We would find time to talk before courses or during breaks. Then in late 2004, she disappeared. I wondered if Naz had gone back to her real life. Years later, I found out what had happened to Naz during this time. She underwent a confidential mission for the church where she thought she was being prepared for a special humanitarian project, but ended up with the role of Tom's girlfriend. The man assigned to prepping Naz for this mission was Greg Wilhere, a senior Sea Org executive, Inspector General, RTC, and David Miscavige's right-hand man. His efforts should have been focused more on furthering the aims and goals of Scientology. Instead, it seemed his expertise was used for prepping people for real-life Mission Impossible, putting up with Tom Cruise and David Miscavige. To get Naz ready for Tom, he needed to get rid of her current boyfriend. He tried to convince her that her boyfriend was only a distraction to her mission in the church. "No," Naz said, "I love my boyfriend. He's my best friend, and I don't want to do that." The next angle Greg tried was telling Naz that her boyfriend was not qualified to associate with the dignitaries and world leaders Naz would be meeting on the mission, implying that he was committing transgressions against Scientology and wasn't a good person. Naz still refused. Unable to convince Naz, Greg showed Naz parts of her boyfriend's confidential confessional folders in which he admitted to several transgressions against Naz. Still not convinced, Naz confronted her boyfriend without revealing her source. When he admitted to the transgressions against her, she broke up with him. Once Naz was available, the church did its homework on her, including background checks, culling her personal and confidential PC and ethics folders with a fine-tooth comb, countless sec checks, and an extensive study program that included reading the policy, The Responsibility of Leaders, Scientology's indoctrination on how one should act with and around those in a position of power and influence. This screening process also covered physical appearance and included on-camera interviews and photo shoots at the Celebrity Center in Los Angeles. After some time, Naz was approved to meet Tom. The next step required that her physical appearance met his standards. Her orthodontic braces were removed, her hair color was darkened, and Greg took her on a very expensive shopping spree in Beverly Hills to buy a new wardrobe for her mysterious meetings with dignitaries. Naz was flown first class to New York for the first step in her secret mission. On the flight, Greg randomly asked Naz, "What would your ideal date be like?" Naz wasn't in the mood to think about dating, as she just ended a 5-year relationship and was heartbroken. But after some thought, she said, "Well, I love ice skating and sushi." Oblivious, to the intent behind Greg's question. Their first stop for the mission was the New York org, where Nas was to get a special tour and briefing by Greg. Tommy Davis and Tom Cruise happened to walk by. Greg introduced Tom and Nas, and then Tommy asked if Greg and Nas would like to accompany them to the Empire State Building, which was closed to the public at the time, followed by sushi at Nobu, and then ice skating at the Rockefeller Center ice skating rink, also closed to the public when they got there. And although in that moment she realized that it all could not have been a coincidence, who could say no to Tom Cruise? He was not only handsome and hugely successful, he was also revered among Scientologists, and he had chosen her. She overlooked the way in which the church got her there and felt like she had won some kind of lottery. After the wooing process, Nas was in love. The church was quick to deny that there had been any special project or that any of her boyfriend's auditing materials were shared. But her joy was short-lived. She dated and lived with Tom for 3 months. The church appeared to be involved in all aspects of the relationship. She was chaperoned by Tommy and Jessica constantly, who asked Nas to report anything non-optimum she observed in Tom so that they could help him. "Do you think he's happy?" they would ask her. And Jessica even offered unsolicited advice such as, "Why don't you be more aggressive with Tom and just put your hands down his pants when you see him?" Nas quickly discovered that her mission was to make Tom happy, even at the expense of her own happiness. 3 months into Nas and Tom's relationship, Jessica was summoned to a closed-door meeting with Tom. Right after the meeting, Jessica told Nas to pack a few things and go with her to Celebrity Center, where Nas was going to be staying for just a few days. She wasn't allowed to talk to Tom, who was said to be busy after his meeting with Jessica and was not to be approached. Jessica showed Nas a few policies from the PTSSP course, which stands for Potential Trouble Source Suppressive Person, and told Nas that she had become a robot, and that because of this, Nas needed to sign up for the PTSSP course immediately and not to contact Tom Cruise because he was busy and didn't need his girlfriend. "You've lost that certainty you had when we first met you," Jessica told her. "That is what happens when you're separated and isolated from everyone you know and love and told what to do in every aspect of your life," Nas says. "If I am a robot, it's because you turned me into one." Next came a meeting with Tommy Davis. Tommy said, "So, how do you think it's going with Tom?" Nas replied, "Not good." Tommy agreed, "Yep, not good." Nas wanted answers as to why her boyfriend wasn't doing his own breaking up and asked to talk to Tom directly to no avail. Nas then went back to Greg and told him she was aware that this had all been a setup and he had misled her from the start. He responded, "Of course, how else is he going to meet someone qualified? At a club? Look, I can lead a horse to water, but I can't make it drink." Not surprisingly, Tom, through his lawyers, has denied all of this. The church never helped find him a girlfriend. Nas never moved in with him. Almost as some sort of consolation prize, Nas was sent to Flag to get onto OT7 and was put up in a suite. Even though the stay was all expenses paid, it did nothing to remove the hurt she felt. Devastated by her experience, Nas confided in a friend who seemed to want to help her. The friend then immediately wrote up a 9-page report on Nas. Tommy told Nas that he briefed Tom and told him that Nas was being handled. She was then quickly demoted to living in a cheaper motel away from Cruz's environment and subjected to doing 4 months of menial labor, including tasks such as digging ditches and cleaning public toilets with a toothbrush. Eventually, she was promoted to selling Dianetics books on the streets of Tampa. Better, but still humiliating. All the while, she was being deprogrammed with security checks and the PTSSP course. She wasn't allowed to talk to anyone, particularly her Scientology friends, since she was considered a traitor. She was not allowed to go anywhere alone unless escorted by either church security, ethics staff, or a representative of Flag's president's office. And if you ask the church, they will deny that these practices exist or that people are punished at all. One day, while being escorted to do amends, Nas saw a friend and fellow actress, Marisol Nichols. Nas smiled and said hello, but Marisol turned her back to Nas and walked off. Nas asked her escort why she would do something like that, and the woman's response was, "Why wouldn't she? You just got done scrubbing toilets. What makes you think you have anything to talk about with a successful Scientologist like that? You have nothing in common." Nas had started to believe that perhaps she was as evil as they were suggesting. After all, this was her religion, and they were telling her she had committed the ultimate sin of betraying Tom. Nas found her faith being tested because she couldn't reconcile any of these practices her church had appeared to be behind. But she mainly complied because her mother was still a Scientologist at the time and would have been forced to disconnect if she didn't remain in good standing with the church. Nas's mom, like many Scientologists, said to her daughter, "Nas, please just do what they ask and get through your punishment." Nas's house, as well as her mother's house, were visited by church officials, and anything Tom had ever given her, pictures of the two of them together, or gifts given to her by Bella and Connor, anything of their lives together, was removed. Months later, Tom was engaged to Katie Holmes. That's when Nas and her mother left Scientology, and everyone they knew from it behind. I certainly felt sorry for Nas, who reached out to me after I was declared an SP because she also had left the church. But I was afraid that she was actually a double agent. She had never publicly spoken out against Scientology. So I would meet in person only if it was in a public place. More specifically, the restaurant where I was having dinner with my Dancing with the Stars partner, Tony Dovolani, and our respective families. In the fall of 2013, I was one of the celebrity contestants on the ABC dance competition show. Since I had just left Scientology, it was a very emotional time for me, and sometimes I seemed to break down for no reason at all. Without asking too many questions about my story, Tony, who remains a good friend, immediately started to defend me, which got him and Cheryl Burke, another friend, unfollowed and unfriended by Kirstie Alley, who actually tried to convince the Dancing with the Stars producers not to have me on the show when she heard I was going to be a contestant. I hadn't seen Nas since she fell out with Tom, but in the lounge of a Beverly Hills hotel with my family and Tony's surrounding us, she fell into my arms and wept. It didn't matter that we were in public. She had finally found someone who was sympathetic to what she had been through and who understood. I held her because I, unlike most people, understood her pain and what they had put her through. To explain it to someone outside the church would take months, and if you were to explain it to someone inside the church, they probably wouldn't care, wouldn't want to hear about it, and most likely write you up in a knowledge report for even discussing it. Nas had been manipulated and lied to, all in an effort to keep Tom Cruise happy. Who knows whether Tom was aware of all that was done to her, but for him to have dismissed her without saying goodbye or speaking directly to her seemed beyond cruel. "I know, baby, it wasn't you," I kept saying to her while she cried. "What you were put through was evil." Like me, Nas just wanted assurance that she wasn't crazy and that she wasn't evil. Every Scientologist personally takes on so much. If it isn't trying to figure out what transgression you've committed, it's going from course to course and auditing until collectively, you're in it for about $500,000 easy, and for most, those who aren't celebrities, executives, or people who come from wealth, this is money they don't have. It's all so upside down. Even if you want to give back to the greater world in some way, Scientology provides the venue. It's an all-inclusive religion. "Oh, you want to be a humanitarian? We have just the program for you." But it's always in the church. Always. You are discouraged from giving money to the Red Cross when disaster hits. Instead, give it to the church to help disaster victims. The result is you get to feel like a better person without ever needing to dirty yourself with the outside world. You are under the impression that you and Scientology are doing amazing things for the outside world and for humanity, when all you're actually doing is forwarding the church's agenda, because Parishioners are discouraged from checking the facts online and elsewhere of what is actually being done and who is actually being helped. You buy into it completely. Even as your own life falls apart before your eyes, you don't notice because you are too busy receiving all these awards and certificates from your church that say you are moving up. It's a satisfaction you don't get in the real world, where doing good things doesn't immediately or even necessarily translate into recognition. Once I realized that about Scientology, I could no longer stay in it, and I never looked back. The big mistake I made, however, was trying to change the system instead of just changing myself. I didn't need to fight the machine, make it wrong in order to prove myself right. If Scientologists are happy in the church, I say God bless. Honestly, it's probably better for them to keep getting jerked off in the church because they'll never experience that kind of validation in the real world. Once outside the church, they would be devastated, as my family and I had been, to find out what they had dedicated their lives and money to was not happening. That Scientology was, in fact, not clearing the planet. In truth, I'm lucky. Unlike many others whose family disowned them after they leave the church, my family chose to leave with me. Despite the fact that the church did everything in its power to break us apart, and as much as I'd like to say my family's leaving Scientology was out of pure love for and solidarity with me, it wasn't just that. They were disillusioned with the church as well. My mother had been on OT7 for 25 years, meaning that she was required to audit herself 6 times a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Additionally, my mother was asked to do more and more sec checks, auditing, and trips to flag, all of which, of course, cost more and more money. And finally, she began to lose faith. Even someone like my mother, a woman who devoted her entire life and her family's lives to Scientology, had the nagging feeling that she was going around in circles. But she had come so far and spent so much money, to give up at that point would have been really depressing. "I just want to get through it," she used to say. "I've been doing it this long, I just want to get through it." After my mom achieved OT8, the highest level on the auditing side of the bridge, and became a Class 6 auditor, the highest class that she can become as a parishioner, she admitted it wasn't everything she thought it was going to be. All those missed birthdays, vacations, and anniversaries, only to find out the Scientology secret to the universe hadn't been worth it for her. She couldn't move objects with her mind or cure cancer by the force of her will. She was still just herself. So after I proved to her that everything I was saying about the church's leadership was true, that they don't apply policy and will do anything, including lie to the parishioners who pay their bills to get their way, she was really done. I too was done. But as Sophia said, it takes longer to be done inside. You can take the girl out of Scientology, but it's much, much harder to take the Scientology out of the girl. Chapter 18. So while those in the church knew I had left Scientology, those outside the church found out courtesy of the front page of the New York Post. It was picked up by hundreds of news outlets around the world. The headline read, "Exclusive: Actress Leah Remini quits Scientology after years of interrogations." As a response in a statement to The Hollywood Reporter, I said, "I wish to share my sincere and heartfelt appreciation for the overwhelming positive response I have received from the media, my colleagues, and fans from around the world. I am truly grateful and thankful for all your support." And with that, it was confirmed that I had indeed left. Everywhere I looked, I now realized that my world was not being helped by Scientology. Previously, I had blinders on because I had to. If I didn't, I would have had to make a decision that would affect not just me, but my entire family. Unlike most people who grew up in the church, I always maintained friendships outside of the church. I guess, in a way, I was always disaffected. My Scientology friends didn't really have non-Scientology friends. And if it appeared that they did, it was merely to eventually, over time, recruit them into the church. It was a good thing that I insisted on keeping friends outside the church because once they found out that I had left, they immediately reached out with their support and kindness. Kevin James called me and said, "How's your family? Are you guys all intact?" He said he was proud of me, that we were brave, and told me whatever I needed, he was there. Chelsea Handler texted me from out of the country where she heard the news. "Hey, twat, be home in a few days. Hope you're okay, and if you're not, let me know what you need, and I will be there." Michelle Visage, a friend I had met and grown close to during my King of Queens days, called me right away. "Are you home? I'm coming over." And she did. Michelle also publicly came to my defense, which is a lot, knowing how the church deals with anyone defending someone who attacks Scientology. My longtime friend Lucille from Brooklyn was crying when I picked up her phone call. She said, "Lee, do you have your family with you? I just need to know that they left the church with you." "Yes, Lou, they are with me," I said, consoling her. My ex-boyfriend's mother texted me, "Lee, I loved you before, but I don't think I ever respected you and your family more than today." I had a community of people supporting me and my family on social media, in the press, in emails, small gestures that meant everything. But my publicist instructed me not to talk to the media because she didn't want me to be known as the person who left the church. But I also didn't want to be known as the person who said no comment. I was definitely caught between being the girl who speaks out and the girl who just wants to work and be known for that work. I did a few interviews where I tried to explain my position while not going into too much detail, but anything I said was blown out of proportion to make a headline. The church's dismissals and bullying of those who had left before me and spoken out made it harder and harder to remain silent. I called my publicist daily to ask, "Please, can I call the media and tell the truth and have the church challenge and debate me instead of defenseless people?" "Of course you could," my publicist always responded, "but why?" The why was somebody needs to stand up for those who can't. But I understood what my rep was saying. I was still angry, confused, and experiencing a myriad of emotions I couldn't make sense of. I didn't yet know how to tell my story from a place of strength as opposed to one of just pain and anger. Certainly, I couldn't do that on a 5-minute segment on Ellen. But while I was promoting the 17th season of Dancing with the Stars, which I competed in right after I left the church, that's all people wanted to talk to me about. Instead of fighting it, I chose to deal with it in a way that sent a message but wasn't too in your face. In the first week of the ABC show, during a filmed rehearsal with my partner Tony Dovolani, I made the following statement, which was picked up by various media outlets all over the world. "I'm going through a personal and big change for me and my family," I said. "The church is looking for me to fail so they can say to the parishioners, 'See what happens when you leave the church?'" In response to my comment, the church issued its own to Good Morning America. Quote, "We know this may come as a surprise to someone as self-absorbed as Miss Remini, but we could care less if she wins or loses on Dancing with the Stars." That was the on-air drama. There was so much more going on, however, off-camera, including Tony being surveilled and followed by a car for 2 weeks. Maxim Shmyrkovsky, Kirstie's dance partner and friend from when she was on the show, was given the cold shoulder by Kirstie when she found out that he had been at my house. "Max didn't take it too hard. I'm Jewish," Max said. "I don't really believe in science fiction, but whatever. It's sad that we've gone through so much together, and I feel like I've helped her, and this is where we're at now. But I think the world of her, and I wish her the best." Kirstie also went on the Howard Stern show, where she said that I was very critical after leaving Scientology, and she also said that I am her enemy and called me a bigot. Further going on to say, quote, "There's nothing going on, and there was nothing going on for years," she said. "I didn't shun her. But if a lot of people are rejecting you, at some point you gotta ask, what am I doing? I mean, that's what I would have asked myself." When actor and former Scientologist Jason Begay, whom I'd met and befriended in acting class, was asked in an interview if he thought Scientology wanted me to fail, he responded, "It's not just that they want you to fail, it's kind of like they want you to die." Tony Dovolani had no idea what he was getting himself into when he found out that he was getting me as a partner for Dancing with the Stars. With only few exceptions, over the seasons, Tony was known for getting the short end of the stick when it came to dancing partners. Perhaps for this very reason, I had requested him as a partner. That and the fact that Angelo approved of him. I just knew he'd be right for me. I couldn't see myself dancing with anyone else. When they paired us, I remember thinking, this poor guy, he is in for such a shitstorm. Tony wasn't familiar with the Church of Scientology, so I filled him in a little, but he learned more by observing me than by what I shared with him. My family and I had just left the church, and I was dealing with the fallout, including the media attention that came with it. It was a lot to cope with. Our lives had changed in an instant, but I had made the decision to do the show, and I didn't want to fail, despite the fact that I had no prior dance experience. Not even the Nutcracker as a kid. Tony's job is difficult. He has to become all things to a perfect stranger from day one. In a normal season, all he might have to deal with is a person's insecurities with dancing. But with me, he not only had to hold my hand through the dances, but he had to deal with a whole other set of issues. He had to maneuver through my defenses, through my tears, my anxieties, and insecurities on a daily basis. He was there for me when I needed him, when my friends from the church had deserted my family and me. If a work day was supposed to be 4 hours, Tony gave me 12. He never said, no, I can't rehearse anymore, or no, I can't talk to you anymore about this. I never once heard him say, no, and I can't listen to one more story about your former life. It was always, and still is, whatever you need, and I am here for you. And he and his family continue to be there for me and my family. After every show, competitors were required to go through a press line with more than a dozen media outlets. Tony literally and figuratively held my hand through the first weeks of the show. He knew how I was always on the verge of tears when I was asked a question about Scientology, and he would always say, come on, man, this woman just danced her ass off. Talk about that. He did this repeatedly. When the producers pushed him to get me to talk about leaving the church during televised rehearsals, he turned them down. He stood up to everyone on my behalf, no matter who it was or what it was for. I wish they awarded Mirabals for being an extraordinarily loyal friend, protector, and therapist, because Tony would certainly win it, all while attempting to teach me a cha-cha. For that, I will always be indebted to him. A few weeks into Dancing with the Stars, Tony came to me and said, look, the producers would like you to at least consider doing something with the Scientology subject. Up until this point, Tony and the show's producer had done a great job of protecting me from the constant questions from the press line as well as on the show, but for the most memorable year show, where contestants create dances out of the biggest moments in their lives, the producers wanted to get what was really going on in my life, and that was a big part of it. They asked me if I would consider the subject of leaving Scientology as the inspiration for the dance. I didn't want to keep saying no to them. It was show business after all, and I felt I had to give them something, so I chose to dance to Katy Perry's Roar. Looking at the pop song's lyrics, I thought, yes, this is how I felt so many times in the church. You held me down, but I got up. Get ready, because I've had enough. I see it all. I see it now. I shared my idea with Tony, who loved it, as did the producers. Tony worked overtime choreographing a dance that showed me as a puppet and him as the church of hypocrisy, pulling my strings, controlling me. I broke down several times during the rehearsal. I was plagued by doubt. Were people going to see this as a sad attempt for publicity? Would they get the pain involved in this? Each time I started to cry, Tony would pull me outside, away from the cameras, which was against the rules, to shield me from being filmed. Everyone on the show knew how difficult this was for me and offered me nothing but support. Sometimes the producers stopped the cameras on their own. Cheryl Burke would leave her rehearsal room with Jack Osborne anytime they saw me and Tony go outside to talk. They gave up precious time from their own rehearsal just to be there for me. That's why I fell in love with Tony, Cheryl, Jack, and the show as a whole. It comforted me and took care of me in ways that I had never imagined. The day of the Most Memorable Year show, I was nervous. But I told myself that people would understand what I was doing and the world would see it as my roar. That night, in front of the audience and my family, Tony and I danced our hearts out. Unfortunately, the judges didn't think much of the dance, giving Tony and me the low score of the evening. Upon hearing this, I started to cry, but Tony grabbed my shoulders and said, "Don't you do that. Don't let them see you like that. You are great. As always, Tony had my back." I couldn't have gotten as far as I did in Dancing with the Stars if I hadn't had the guts to do the show in the first place. I had been asked to do the show in a previous season and had declined. I eventually agreed to do Dancing with the Stars because I didn't want to be scared to go out of my comfort zone. I didn't want to care about what people thought of me anymore. I didn't want to be judged for my decisions. The truth is, I was scared to do a live show that I had to dance in. But I didn't want to shrink from the public eye. I wanted to get myself out there, and that's exactly what I did. Chapter 19. Right after I left the church, my first thought was, bad things are going to happen to me. Even though bad things had been happening to me in the church, and for a long time, I still couldn't shake a thought process of personal cause and effect that had been hammered into me ever since my mother sat Nicole and me down at our kitchen table in Bensonhurst as kids and talked to us about the precepts from her communications course. As an anecdote to my ruminating, I actively filled my head with a different kind of idea. I looked at everything I used, from Post-its to shampoo, and reasoned that somehow these companies have found a way to be successful without Scientology. People, happy, well-off, fulfilled people, walk by me every day who didn't use LRH technology. After thinking a certain way and being told what to think based on strict policy for more than 30 years, learning to think for myself and make my own choices did not come easily, nor did it happen overnight. Now, more than 2 years after cutting ties with the church, I'm still trying to figure things out. This mindset, which had been drilled into me for decades, is not an easy thing to unlearn. With practically every decision I made when I first left, and still even now, I had to ask myself, is that what you really think, or what a Scientologist would think? During this confusing early period, I sometimes felt adrift, but I had one figure I kept front and center in my mind to keep from going crazy. Nicole Kidman. That's right. Tom Cruise's ex-wife was my guardian angel. Although I never met her or attempted to meet her, I thought about her a lot. While I stared at the dark ceiling at night, unable to sleep, I would say to myself, remember Nicole Kidman. She left the church and she's doing okay. Her career is still going and she has a husband and family. Just remember, Nicole Kidman. She left and she's okay. And while the many friends I had in the church turned their backs on me, a number of those who had already left offered me comfort and solace. My friend Paul Haggis, the movie director and former longtime Scientologist, sent me a note, part of which read, but here is what I want you to know. I will do anything for you, anything you need, privately or very publicly. Decide what that is, what you need of me, and ask, and I will just say yes. The fact that you refused to disconnect from me truly touched me. You were the only one, which says a lot about you and even more about the good people who used to be our mutual friends. You are a better example of a Scientologist than they ever were because you truly apply your code of honor and the danger formula, both of which they are afraid to do honestly. Over the past few years, I have read this letter hundreds of times to remind myself that I could just possibly be a good person at times. When Paul left the church and became the subject of a New Yorker magazine article and Lawrence Wright's book Going Clear, he took and continues to take a lot of heat from the church and its members. It was very public. One of the reasons Paul left the church was because of the offensive manner in which they view homosexuality. Two of Paul's daughters are gay, and he knew that he could no longer participate in a religion that discounted his own children. I, like him, was disgusted by the church's position, and as a result, I refused to disconnect from him despite the fact that I had been told to do so. Paul was and remains a friend. I'm so happy for you. You're about to experience life for the first time, Jason Begay said to me a few weeks after I left. It's like Christmas when you're a kid, magical and amazing. The last time I saw Jason was at CC, Celebrity Center. I said, hi, baby, what are you doing? Naturally, I meant course-wise or auditing-wise, but he answered, leaving. I was confused, so I asked him what he meant. Leaving the church, he said. I still didn't get it. CC? No, the whole thing, kitten. The news came as a complete shock. Jason was so dedicated. What happened? What could I do to help? I said. He just smiled his movie star smile and said, "No, baby doll, it's done, but I love you." Now that I had left the church, Jason was trying to show me what he had already experienced. His comment about it being like Christmas reminded me of the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas, where everyone lives in Halloween Town, and all they know from is a world related to Halloween. One day, the main character, Jack Skellington, wanders into the forest and finds 7 holiday doors and opens a portal to Christmas Town here for the first time. He finds that there is a world outside of Halloween. He begins to question all he sees when he continually asks, "What's this?" It was the same thing for me, and I imagine for anyone else who has left a cult-like community. Worlds open up to you that you were previously cut off from. I now realize that there are plenty of people in the world doing good things, not just Scientologists, as I was falsely led to believe. Most Scientologists will never meet Tom Cruise or David Miscavige. They will never experience seeing behind the curtain like I and a handful of others have. And that is why most of my friends found what I went through unbelievable. On the other side of things, sitting down and talking to my non-Scientology friends for the first time about the double life I had been leading and unburdening myself to them with the truth was scary but ultimately cathartic. I was nervous to tell Jennifer that not only had I left the church, but her father, David Lopez, a longtime Scientologist, might have pressure put on him to disconnect from his daughter or to have Jennifer disconnect from me. I called her and told her I needed to come over and talk to her. Her first response was, "Is everyone okay?" "Yes, it's about the church." I drove to her house, going over in my mind if it would be the last time I would see or talk to her, if our friendship would be over, much like it had been with my friends in the church who had chosen to disconnect from me. Upon my arrival at Jennifer's, she was waiting for me with my favorite coffee. I started with, "So, the church has this policy," and I explained disconnection to her. "If you stay friends with me, your dad will have to choose between you and the church, and in more cases than not, people choose the church. So I'm telling you that I understand your choice to disconnect from me." Jennifer is a family girl, 100%, and although we are close, I assume she would unequivocally choose her family, which I respected and was totally prepared for. Although I would have to mourn the loss of yet another friendship, I wouldn't want her to make any other decision. As I sat there with my head down and tears welling in my eyes, she said, "That is the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. I know, Jen, but it's the policy of the church." She rolled her eyes and said, "That's my dad. He would never. And you are my friend. I don't want to ever talk about this bullshit again." And with that, she offered me a chocolate chip cookie. As the press rolled out the news in subsequent weeks, Jen often reminded me not to get caught up in the game of it, but to remember that good things happened to me while I was in the church and to take what positive experiences I had and move on with love from there. To find peace with it, not to hate them. I am grateful to have Jennifer in my life, and while she may be known as J-Lo to most, at the same time she is a person who continues to improve who she is as a mother, a daughter, a sister, a woman. Once people reach a certain level in this business, they stop trying, and my friend hasn't. And for that, I admire her and am most impressed. Jen is open to different paths, which is one of the many things I love about her. She doesn't judge and is truly about self-love. She introduced me to therapy, and she helped me to open my mind to the idea that there is more than one way. For the last 30-plus years, I was taught that there is only one way, and that way is Scientology. So, while it's been a little more than 2 years now since I left the organization, for the first time it's like I'm living a real and authentic life. Everything from sitting and enjoying a glass of wine with non-Scientologist girlfriends without secretly judging them as they speak about their lies and thinking Scientology could help them with that, to worrying that I'm wasting my time finding enjoyment in my child or family when I should be on course or in session instead. I put so much time, energy, and resources into the church that it left little room for anything else. In an attempt to further explore the world outside Scientology, I have been learning, or at least trying to learn, how to deal with my emotions in therapy. Any form of psychoanalysis or therapy is completely frowned upon by the church. My therapist has opened my eyes to so much information and knowledge that it's helped me understand myself and other people. We also worked on trying to alleviate the massive guilt I felt not only for abandoning a church that I was part of my whole life, but also for leading my whole family out of it as well. I was responsible for the fact that my mother, stepfather, sister, and brother-in-law lost their entire social network. My brother-in-law also lost his dad, his sisters, and his nephew. The damaging domino effect started with me. It has occurred to me, more than I'd like to admit, that maybe I was a suppressive person who did the wrong thing. Did you ever think that maybe you've saved their lives? My therapist once asked. You all learned what you learned from Scientology. Now you're out, and your new job could be something else because you went through it. Instead of bashing Scientology, she asked me what worked about it. Her point was that in life there are knowledges. You can take a little bit from this and a little bit from that, use what works for you, and leave the rest. Leah, it doesn't need to be all right or all wrong. Take what worked. Don't try to throw away everything from Scientology. But that was the policy of the church. You were either all in or all out. It is an extremist religion. There is no middle ground, and there, within its structure, lies the danger. It was as if she were giving me permission to find resolution in my past. With that, I felt such relief. Once I started to encounter testimonies of abuse at the hands of the church, I also started to doubt all of the technology and practices that I had learned and applied over the decades as well. Today, I'm able to ascertain which concepts and precepts were helpful to me and am able to still apply them. And I'm now comfortable with the idea that even if I could find things the church offered me that feel right, that didn't mean my leaving it was wrong. And although I thought the problem with the church was David Miscavige and Tom Cruise, now I realize that if both of them left the church tomorrow, I wouldn't necessarily feel differently about Scientology. To me, it's a structural flaw of the faith that its adherents are forbidden from challenging the leader and its policies at all costs. And right behind the current leader is another of the same kind. People are surprised when they hear that I don't feel anger toward my mother for getting us into Scientology in the first place. She stood by me when it mattered the most, after I left the church. And I know she always had my best interest at heart. She didn't want her daughters growing up in a bad environment. She wanted more for us. And yet, she didn't have any other options for getting us out of Brooklyn. My mom, aspiring, hardworking, but without resources or a safety net, was the perfect candidate for Scientology. So she took us to Florida on a leap of faith, believing in what she was doing, just as I believe in what I'm doing now. And just as my mother fought for Nicole and me to have a better life, now I'm looking out for my own daughter. And I'm grateful that I never indoctrinated her in any way before I left the church. As long as I was a Scientologist, the church told me what to do and what not to do in almost every aspect of my life. If I had any doubts about leaving my faith, they vanished when I thought of Sophia growing up with that same kind of dependency. I didn't want her to grow up thinking her connection to the church was the measure of her success in life. I wanted her to be an individual. Belief and faith are great, but very few people have been led astray by thinking for themselves. In the end, change is never easy. Living with a core set of beliefs that completely unravel is unsettling, to say the least. We all have to decide, do we want to live in regret, suffer pain, and demonize ourselves for believing in and carrying out the tenets of the church, or do we want to look at what we gained? The bad had to happen. If it didn't, we would still be walking around with blinders on. not seeing the world at large. We wouldn't have been given the gift to explore new ideas, new ways of being, thinking, open to the possibilities that there are other beliefs, different paths that can bring us closer to others. We would not be able to be more solid than ever in our belief that what is true for you is true because you yourself have observed it to be true. We all have a newfound strength in that we will never again believe just because. For most of my childhood and adult life, I thought I had the answers and most of the world was just lost. As I've grown, I've learned that I know almost nothing. And so in that, I feel reborn in a sense. I'm reading, I go to therapy, I do things that bring me joy, learning to love the one person I didn't like very much, myself. I am a combative, inquisitive, argumentative person, and I will never allow anyone to change that. I still have anger, but I'm okay with that because it fuels me to continue to right any wrongs I may see. And it's because of that and the support of my true friends and my family that I was able to fight my way out of Scientology and see the world for the first time. Without judgment or pressure not to think the way I do or to have a different faith. Our lives have begun. Lessons are being learned and we are healing. It's never too late to begin again. Better, stronger, more evolved. And to all my fellow troublemakers, I say, carry on. This is Leah Remini. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Troublemaker, Surviving Hollywood and Scientology. Text copyright 2015 by Leah Remini, production copyright 2015, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.